Good morning. May it please the Court, I am Alan Harris for the petitioner. And we've already gone over his name. Thank you. This case is a case that deals with a judge who found that there was no exception to the one-year rule and then stood to see if the petitioner had a clear probability of harm if he was returned to his country. The problem with that is that the petitioner, in fact, had an exception to the one-year bar on his filing of political asylum. This petitioner had plenty of harm because of his persecution. His persecution and harm were that he was a Jew who was publishing anti-government brochures in the country of Russia. Because of this, his father was killed, strangled in the publishing house. The petitioner himself, the son, was threatened by telephone calls, beaten at a Jewish theater, attacked at the publishing house, threatened by police. He was again attacked for the brochures. He was kidnapped by a car that was a police car. He was detained by five persons in a lot outside the city. They hung him from a tree, from the neck, the
Mr.
same
Harris,
way they had.
Mr. Harris, we've read the briefs. We're familiar with the facts, but you've got me confused now. Are you still claiming entitlement to asylum?
Absolutely, yes,
all right,
sir.
So you don't think that you're barred by the 1 year?
No, we do not.
Can you point to me where in the record you raised this argument before the BIA with regard to the 1 year limitation on the asylum claim?
There is no place to point.
So what do you do with 1158A3? That's the statute.
Yes, I say that he was in status to just a month and a half before he applied for political asylum.
But he has to do it within a year of his entry.
Unless he has extraordinary circumstances, he had changed circumstances under the ACFR 2.
What happened during the year that hadn't already occurred when he entered?
He was married to a United States citizen. He was filing for a green card.
Okay.
If you're in status, you can't get referred to a court if an EOIR.
You can abandon your asylum claim and seek admission as a resident, as married to a resident citizen of the United States, can you not?
Yes, but
under a different statute.
Of course, if you're already married, why don't you just go through the adjustment and why go through political asylum?
Right.
So he didn't have to do the political asylum, but
why didn't he opt to go the other way if he thought that was the better course?
The marriage was the better course under the way the immigration authority here gives out green cards and adjusts people to permanent residence. It is the better course. If you do political asylum, you could lose. If you're married to a United States citizen, it's just a matter of doing the paperwork and going through the procedures.
And keeping the marriage together.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this marriage didn't work out.
What's unusual about that? It's happening all the time.
Keeping the marriage together?
No. Switching applications, switching status. Abandon the petition for asylum, and then seek a status change because of the marriage.
He came here under a K visa, so the correct extension of that is to be married and apply for adjustment through.
Did he ever consummate the marriage? I had the impression from reading the brief that he was the equivalent of a mail order husband, but that he arrived here and basically never consummated the marriage and immediately commenced divorce proceedings.
He lived before the marriage with her, and they had a consummation. And then they came here, had difficulties in this country. And that's when things got awry and broke down and resulted in a divorce 2 years later. Upon the divorce.
It was actually less than 2 years later, wasn't it?
No, in October 1998.
So doesn't the INS regulation say that to be a legitimate marriage, it has to have existed for 2 years prior to entry and last at least 2 years?
Yes, they do say that. Yes, Your Honor.
So for immigration purposes, this was a sham marriage, was it not? As the regulations define it?
I would say that this marriage is a marriage that didn't work out. A sham I can't go with, but this marriage didn't work out, and he couldn't go through the resident alien adjustment. So then he has changed circumstances under 208-4A4II.
I might agree with you if I thought there was a colorable claim to a legitimate marriage, but the problem I'm having is he didn't file his application within a year. The IJ basically made a finding that whatever the status of the marriage was, it didn't last, and you concede that you didn't raise the attack on the one-year asylum statute to the BIA, so I'm wondering whether we even have jurisdiction to consider the asylum claim. Shouldn't we just focus on whether or not he was entitled to withholding of removal?
Well, that jurisdictional situation arises in that Hakim versus the INS 273 F3rd 812 from 2001 in this court. And that case is about, that's the one that says there's the jurisdiction issue. And that case is about a Pakistani who had a criminal charge, and his only alternative was to do withholding. But this is a case where there's a choice between doing the political asylum and the withholding. And that's an important difference than Hakim. Real important. This is a very important case in that regard. And it's important that this court sees that if you're given the choice of doing political asylum withholding, you'd rather be doing political asylum. And then if the case is appealed to the BIA and the BIA says, well, the judge found you not credible on the withholding claim, but here we don't agree with his credibility finding in the BIA, but we're going to hold with the 1 year. That's why we're here. That's like when you deny and a grant. It's kind of in part and in part, and they would remand on one side of it. But we're here only because of the one year issue. This is alone the 1 year issue here. And that's what I'm here to argue about, why Hakim has to be distinguished. And we can't just follow it blindly and say, wait a minute, there's no jurisdiction here. This is the kind of case that you're looking for where the credibility is not an issue. The BIA said, the BIA made one sentence here that said, although we do not find that the record adequately supports the adverse credibility finding, we do find that there's a probative value because it's reduced by the vague nature of the testimony provided. So that's it. One sentence.
Counsel,
we're here.
If you express a particular, or maintain a particular political opinion that's hostile to the government, and you are threatened and you are harassed, does that mean that you have been persecuted?
Yes, it certainly does.
Threats and harassment are sufficient and the equivalent of persecution in your argument.
If they're in the aggregate and the totality of the situation, that's enough.
So
this case has
if more. There is no physical impairment, no deprivation of any kind of rights, other, it's just harassment and threats. That's sufficient.
In the totality of it.
Threats go on in our political scheme all the time around here.
Well, thank God there's more in this case.
Well,
they hung this man. They took him to the jail. They beat him. They put him in with criminals. That's government action, sir.
Okay.
Do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
My pleasure. Thank you very, very much this morning.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Dan McClain, on behalf of the respondent. Mr. Samsonov's claim for asylum is outside this Court's jurisdiction for two reasons. One is he never raised it in his opening brief. So as a jurisprudential matter, this Court has held that unless you raise issues in your opening brief, we're going to deem it waived. But perhaps the more overarching reason is that the statute, the INA, says very clearly that no court shall have jurisdiction to review determinations made under 1158A2. And that's the provision upon which the board and the immigration judge both relied upon in finding that the asylum claim was not timely filed. So that's off the table. All that we have left is the withholding for removal claim. And the courts, and that's, again, reviewed under the substantial evidence standard. The board concluded that Mr. Samsonov did not establish his eligibility for withholding of removal. His testimony was very vague about what his father's manuscript was about. He never identified who his whose alleged persecutors were. He just referred to they without identifying who they were. And he left Russia several times during the period of 1994 and 1995 when he was allegedly being persecuted, went to the Canary Islands, went to Poland, went to the Czech Republic, and returned. This all supports the board's ruling that Mr. Samsonov did not satisfy his eligibility for, did not satisfy the elements required to show that he's eligible for withholding or removal.
What didn't he satisfy?
He didn't meet his burden of persuasion in showing that there was a clear probability of persecution were he to return to Russia. The board found that his testimony was vague and conclusory.
Well, you know, persecution of the Jews in Russia has been going on for hundreds of years.
Well,
you know, I mean,
that may be.
My father came from Russia and came here because of persecution.
That may be true, Your Honor. Our understanding.
What do you mean? It may be true.
Well,
it is
no,
true.
That is true, Your Honor. I'm saying it is true, but
it goes on now.
It does. It may go on now. I can't say for sure. Yes.
Well, all you got to do is read the papers.
Sure.
And read the country report.
Mr. Samsonov's claim is different, though. His claim is that he's being persecuted on behalf of his because of his political opinion, because he's published anti-state materials. He's also claimed that he was harassed outside a Jewish theater by a group of youths. He didn't identify that the youths were affiliated with the government in any way, and it's unclear how that relates to the thrust of his claim, which
when
is,
they put him when the police took him to prison and they put him in a cell with others, what did the cops say to the others?
They used anti-Semitic epithets.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Sort of thrown him to the wolves.
That was one incident, Your Honor. It was unclear who took him to the police station. He was released. It was unclear whether he was charged. And it's certainly not clear that Mr. Samsonov would face a clear probability of persecution were he to return to his country. He left on a K visa. He didn't show to the immigration judge one brochure of the thousands that his father allegedly published, or that he allegedly published, of his father's writings. He did.
Was he able to take him out?
Presumably he was. He left voluntarily. He left on a K visa. In fact, he didn't even tell the consular officer that he was leaving because of persecution. His testimony was that he didn't say that because he didn't want to intellectually insult the consular officer.
Well, I went there. You know, you have to go through to get on the airplane. I mean, they look at if you got a Bible, they take it away from you. They want to see everything you got in there. I mean, they take all that stuff away. So a lot of the literature had to be smuggled out.
There's no evidence. We respectfully suggest, Your Honor, that there's no evidence that that occurred in this case.
When did he go through? What year?
1996. He arrived in the country in October 1996. So this is not, you know, we're 7 years removed from the Soviet state. Obviously, there may be some problems there, but there's no testimony from Mr. Samsonov that he was searched and brochures were removed or anything like that. Unless there are further, and finally on the point, even if the court did have jurisdiction to review the timeliness of his asylum application, it's clear that when he came here in October 1996, by his own testimony, he never lived with his wife. It's clear he said that the marriage was falling apart then. There's certainly substantial evidence that then supports the board's decision that he should had filed a one-year an asylum application within the 1 year of his arrival. For those reasons, we respectfully request that the court deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Okay. A little rebuttal? You know, you remind me a little bit of Woody Allen.
Whatever good stuff you say is good, tell my wife.
What? But
whatever you say good, please tell my wife, too.
No, I mean, I like Woody.
This case is caught in time. If this case came to trial in the EOIR today, it would be allowed the political asylum claim. There's something wrong in the procedures under 1208.4. It's wrong. It needs definition by this court because that one-year bar doesn't apply today. I just had a case last week. A lady was worked on her doctorate at UCLA, duration of stay for 10 years, came from Russia. Her parents came contemporaneously with the 10th year as refugees from Russia, and she said, now I'm out of status. We waited 4 days after. We filed for political asylum, and they said, fine. In the 11th year, they said, there's no one-year bar. This needs definition by this court. I am here about that one-year bar. I the clear probability, if you listen to this case with the ear of withholding, it's a higher standard. This petitioner still makes it, Your Honors. But if you listen to this case with political asylum in mind, with that ear, this is an easy case. And I'm asking that attention be paid to this one-year bar. Hakim doesn't apply anymore to this case. He only had the chance for withholding. This is a person who has a chance for political asylum. And I ask that you address that.
Why did they let this other lady do it after 10 years?
Because of all the direction that the court has. The court has, I asked yesterday. I sat with the judge last night. He said, tell them about the Federal Register, January 5th, 2000. In the notes, it says a reasonable period after you're out of status is 6 months to file. You cannot file here when you're in status. It doesn't go to the court. I have cases all the time. If I say, what's the matter? I'm in status. Oh, wait a minute. We got to wait till you go out of status to file. And if it's an F, boom, I don't care if it's 4 years. I'm in the fifth year. I just did it with the doctor who got a doctorate in piano. It doesn't work.
Well, the doctor in piano?
She wasn't a doctor. She was a doctor in piano. I mean, in UCLA, she got her doctorate
I thought you were talking about the PhD.
Right. Exactly.
I thought you were talking about the movie, you know.
No. But it was a duration of stay visa. She stayed for 10 years, and it's fine. There's no one-year bar. There is no one-year bar. Everybody's out of step. After the judge says, tell about the Federal Register, I went to a DHS attorney yesterday afternoon, and I said, what is it that makes you let everybody just have no problem with the one-year bar? They said, ACFR 208.4A(4) says that you have changed circumstances. That's not changed country conditions. That's changed circumstances to the person. This man had changed circumstances. So now I have the DHS telling me, forget the one-year bar. I have the judge telling me, forget the one-year bar. And then I said to my wife, what do they do in Anaheim? I said, they have an operating instruction. When you're in status, then the reasonable period starts to run. And there's a reasonable period under that section. And it can't, and this court has to take all this and total it up and come out with some direction for everyone. Because I go to court every day. No, I don't care about the one-year rule now in 2004 at all. But this case is from 2000. So everybody's still talking on the cusp of when there's a one-year bar filed before April 1997, or you have 1 year. But all the definitions since then has taken it away. I have had, and this is 2004, in my office, we've done 75 merits hearings, and boom! There's no one-year bar. Who pays? I don't care. Are legal, medical, or you're in status. This man was in status until just a month and a half before. He filed. Reasonable period. There has to be someone to address that. Thank you. I'm sorry to keep you late like this.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I mean,
you've got all this in your brief, haven't you?
No.
Well, once you just, as far as I'm concerned, you can submit a supplemental letter and just put this out.
I'll be more than happy. Sure. I'm so happy that you were kind enough to waive the oral argument in the next case. Since I'm at the end, just 1 second, please. In the next case, I didn't want to talk about it, but I say it's so late, I can't. I was also the attorney in the next case. So I didn't want you to think, you know, we didn't want to come here. So, thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you grant it and then you reverse and remand it with some kind of instruction about the one-year rule. Thank you, Your Honor.
Send us a letter not to exceed, say, 2 or 3 pages.
Okay.
Within 10 days.
I'll have it here on Monday morning. Give it to Mr. Wagner. Thank you so much. I'll have it here on Monday morning. I'll give it to Mr. Wagner.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Wagner.
All right. Is that the proper way for you to meet him? Or sorry, send to San Francisco?
No, he files it.
Oh, okay. Come right over.
He's got a fax machine. We have fax machines.
Oh, I can do it. I speak to Mr. Wagner. Thank you so much.
We're very modern.
Okay, my wife will give it to you by the end of the day.
On the Internet, too, you know. I mean.
Oh, I got you. I'm sorry I make all these references to my wife. I work for my wife. So, you know.
Work for her?
Yeah.
She's under the one-year rule?
Well, she's in the 25-year marriage.
Delighted to hear that, Mr. Harris.
Okay. So what about this? I mean, he tells us that as long as you're in status, the one-year rule doesn't apply. You got this pianist at UCLA. He's done 75 cases.
I don't know.
What the hell's going on?
I don't know anything about that, Your Honor. I will say that there are two different standards here. One is there is an extraordinary circumstances exception to the one-year rule, which the Attorney General, the Board, and the IJ have in their discretion. They can waive the one-year rule if there are extraordinary exceptions, circumstances that they feel apply. In this case, the determination was the extraordinary circumstances do not apply.
Well, he hasn't told us about any extraordinary circumstances. You know, I mean,
well, I assume he
plays the piano at UCLA, gets a PhD, and
right.
She's still in status, and you know, 10 years go by and she applies for it. And,
right.
You know,
right.
It's all done.
Right. But Your Honor, the second problem of that is, can this court review a determination, a discretionary determination by the board and the immigration judge that the extraordinary circumstances exception does or does not apply? And the statute is clear on that. And the statute says this court doesn't have jurisdiction to
review. Well, you know, if there's been a great denial of due process, and maybe we can look at it. We
absolute abuse of discretion.
We got a lot of ways of figuring things out. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but respond to that. I'm just curious.
I don't know anything about his case. My
No. But what he's going to send us on what goes on and what the rules are. He was rattling off a whole bunch of sections.
Sure. The sections. My response is this, Your Honor, that there is an extraordinary circumstances exception.
But he wasn't talking about that.
He was
saying the person's in status. Huh? Person's in status.
Right.
10 years in status when they apply. Okay. No problem.
That may fall within the extraordinary, that seems like a situation that would fall within the extraordinary circumstances exception. You have a bona fide marriage that lasts for 10 years. You don't want to be whipsawed, so it seems that the immigration judge or the board would say that that...
No, well, I thought she was just playing the piano at UCLA for 10 years.
I don't know. Perhaps I'll be better situated to respond to the letter
curious,
when I see it.
You know. I mean, you know, this,
you're certainly
this is a government of law, not of man. We've got to be consistent, right?
You're going to give him 10 days to respond.
Yeah, 10 days to respond.
That's ample time, right? Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Pleasure to have you here. And we'll tune in on your next show, Woody. All right.
Thank you.
Okay,
all.
We're through. We'll adjourn.